I actually don't even eat ketchup with my mac and cheese. Oh, man. So
it needs to like go up to temperature, because if it's like cold, ketchup is like...
Oh, I never even thought of that. Ew, yeah, no.
Yeah, if I was going to put it, I would put it... I don't like ketchup either that much, but if I was going to, I'd need it to be the same temperature as the food, because if you dip it, then it's like, macaroni with like...
Yeah.
But sometimes you need it to cool for the small children, and that's why you put it on, so they can eat it. It's too hot, sweetie, put some ketchup on. Here you go.
Hello, and welcome to The Homestay Kitchen with me, Mary Chan, and Aaron Eastman. This is a podcast where we serve up stories of being a homestay family, the ups and downs of making a connection with international homestay students. We'll bring a plate full of stories, ideas, interviews, and hopefully dish up some anecdotes to share with our community.
One of the major challenges of hosting international students is to navigate the language barrier. Communication is key to any relationship, so then how do you have confidence to speak your mind when your student doesn't even speak your language? Well, at times, you need to be fearless. And in today's episode, we chat with Heather Thompson, who shares this grit with a side of humor. Heather and her family of four has hosted 13 students over 5 years. She discusses her experience as an international student herself when she was young, being a host to students, and even being hosted by a former student when they were in Belgium. Hear what she and her family has learned while hosting and how these experiences created a lot of laughter in their lives. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Mary. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, morning for us.
Yes.
Depending on when people are listening. Could be the afternoon. Could be the evening. Could be overnight.
Good day.
Good day. Good time of the generic day, Erin.
Generic day. Good mornings and afternoons, evenings to you, Mary.
We are here today being really goofy because we are here with my former massage therapist, who ties into the whole homestay thing because we connected a lot over our homestay students over the years. So, hi, Heather.
Hello, Mary.
Hi.
So, Heather, tell us about your hosting history, when you started, and why you got into it.
I started hosting because I had kids and I had rearranged my schedule so that I was home in the afternoons a lot for them to be with them. When I was a teenager, I was able to, I had the privilege of going to Sweden and to Chicoutimi in Quebec, and I was hosted. Oh. And so I had some good memories and of being hosted and some things that I would have changed. And so it's like, you know, it was such a fabulous opportunity for me. So I thought, I could do this for other kids. I thought it would be like enrich our family life and expose my kids to different cultures. But also we had an extra room. So I thought, why not? This will be a great experience.
I did not know about the Sweden and the Chicoutimi from Quebec. That's a totally different like perspective and side for being hosted and now hosting. So what was it about being in Sweden and being in Chicoutimi that made you think this would be a good thing to host?
Well, as like for myself going, it really opened up my eyes to like the different cultures and so on. And experiencing, especially in Sweden, being a foreigner all the time. Even I did learn the language a little bit, but I was a foreigner there and it was a very different experience, which I loved. Being in Chicoutimi, I had a roommate whose name was Gretchen, and she was amazing. So the first day, she was like, I came here to learn French. I will never talk to you in English. And I was like, crap, because I don't really know that French that well. But we used to would sit down for like an hour, 2 hours a night with a dictionary and talk. And the host family thought we were absolutely insane because we could have just been talking to each other in English.
Yes.
But I really learned a lot of French because of her, and we had a great time. So I realized, and the host family really had nothing to do with us. They like fed us dinners, but because we couldn't really speak to them in French, they kind of let us do our own thing. So I thought, wow, like it would have been so much nicer if they had taken us somewhere or done something with us or tried to talk with us a little bit more instead of staring at us as we were talking over dictionary with really, really bad French.
Oh, no.
That gave me some insight of what I would have wanted.
Mm-hmm. And what was your reasoning for going? Was it to learn French or was it just a vacation?
When I went to Sweden, when I came back, I knew more Swedish than I did French. And I felt like I had taken French in high school, you know, in grade 8, grade 9. Actually, I think I started in grade 7. So it was 7 to, and I still could not speak French that well. So I thought I should go on this. I think it was called La Maison Française. Anyway, yes. And so, and hosting students. So we've hosted 13 students in total. Some of them have been just 2 weeks, and some of them had stayed for the entire school year for 10 months. We're not hosting right now because we only have 3 bedrooms in our house, and our kids are old enough, so they all now have their own bedrooms. So we did host last spring break, when there's just two Japanese boys came for 2 weeks. So it was easy. My kids just shared a room for 2 weeks. Yes.
Do they like that? Sharing the room, like having now separated, have their own rooms? And then you're
going back to sharing a room.
They like having students around. Okay. So they're quite gracious too.
Oh, that's good.
They think it's really fun.
But not fun enough that they would share a room forever.
No.
That might cause too much strain on a family. Because how old are your children?
They are 9 and 11.
Yeah, that might cause too much conflict for...
Yeah.
I have that kind of age range in my house.
They really like their own rooms.
Yeah. Your own personal private space. And
exactly. And they have different bedtimes and they have different
study habits, I'm sure, and privacy issues. And speaking from experience, you don't want to inflict that on a student in your house and have that conflict and be nice.
Exactly.
Peaceful would be good. Do you normally host primarily males or do you do females and males?
We had a big mix.
Yeah.
So I feel like we've had many countries. So I've had like 2 Mexican girls, or for someone from Argentina, Brazil, Belgium, Japan, and quite a diverse range of students for sure.
Did you have any preconceived notions before hosting a student from a certain country or anything like that? Because some people automatically just stereotype. I don't want a loud partying student, so no Mexicans and Brazilians sort of a thing, right? Like,
I think that's why we got partnered with the South American students, because we were open to anybody. So I feel like they have the reputation of being a bit louder. But I didn't really find that.
No.
So I was often surprised at the level of English. Because you kind of expect, like, I think our first 3 students had perfect English when they came. And then after that, it was very variable. So I had a lot of expectations about the level of English kids would have. So sometimes when their English was poor, it was a lot more difficult because you're like, whoa, we have no idea what each other is saying right now. And for like a long period of time, like their last 2 Japanese boys that we hosted had no English. I think they could probably, we would sometimes write to each other back and forth because they could read and we use Google Translate a lot. That's one of my expectations, is that they would have a certain level of English. And when they didn't, I would be put off a little bit.
So aside from writing things down and using Google Translate, what were some other tactics that you used to get around the language barrier?
I think just saying like, come.
Dragging them and showing them what you needed them to.
Totally.
Yeah.
Especially scheduling, because they had to take the bus and get to school at a certain time. So it would be like, you have to catch this bus. You have to leave at this time.
Sign language? Yeah.
You don't know if you understand or not at the time. Yes. And then there's I feel like this, I don't know how true this is, but with our Mexican kids, they say sí or yes. But it doesn't always mean they're agreeing to the sentence. It might mean that maybe they understood what you said.
I find that happens a lot with Japanese students, where they just say, yes, yes. They look at you and they nod. They're saying yes, but you're like, you don't understand anything I had just said. And it's just more of an affirmation. Yes, I hear you.
Yes, I'm listening.
Yes, I'm listening.
But they say it with a lot of confidence sometimes.
Oh, really?
So you're like, okay, let's do it. And then you're like, what's going on? They're like, we never agreed to this. Like, okay. Let's rewind.
Maybe repeat back to me. What do you understand? Yeah.
And sometimes the no would mean I just don't understand,
okay,
as opposed to no. So I'd ask, would you want to do this thing? No. okay, let's not do it then. And then they'd be like, oh, I thought we were going to do this. And they're like, oh, somehow I need to ask a different question. Because yes and no is not a good indicator of affirmative or negative feeling.
Right.
How would you feel about, instead of yes or no, like how would you feel about
if we did this, mm-hmm. this, and this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. How do you rephrase that when you're just like, do you want to go to the mall today? No.
How do you feel about shopping today?
Yeah. Exactly. And then yeah. you're like, okay, they clearly don't want to go shopping. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, aren't we going shopping?
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. So that was a challenge.
But that's what, yeah. Even if you try okay. and re.
How do you feel about shopping today?
Yes, yes, yes.
If that we would went shopping.
The shopping would make you feel happy. What would you buy when we go shopping today?
Yes.
So are you even not giving them a choice then? If you say, what would you buy if we went shopping today? You're not giving them a choice of, yes, you want to come shopping with us or not.
You're just turning it more into a conversation. You're trying to gauge, are you actually, do you understand and are you listening? Like, who would we go with, you know, like, or would you prefer to go with friends? Like, you're trying, right? If you're worried that they're not actually understanding and listening, then that might be a way to really pull them. And what are you actually hearing and listening and understanding?
Exactly. Like, yeah. I think it's like body language, mm-hmm. and just actually not taking yes and no as actually yes and no
answers,
because yeah. you might have to yeah. ask them again or say, can you explain what you think is going to happen today?
Like, are you studying? Are you going out? Are we shopping together? Right. But actually trying to figure out what they're comprehending.
Yeah.
Is the plan.
Yes. Because sometimes I felt like I dropped the ball when someone really wanted to do something, but they'd said no. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, I heard no. And they're like, oh, weren't you going to sign me up for the 10K race? And I was like, oh.
Deadlines passed. Sorry. Yeah. Communication.
I miss those things. So.
And yeah, you don't want to feel like it's your fault or you've disappointed somebody, because if there's a miscommunication, then how did that happen and how can we fix it? Right. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What's one of your most memorable challenges that you had?
Every student had a set of challenges, definitely. A lot of the kids from the different countries put a different amount of energy into their application. So our student from Belgium came and I was like, oh, so where do you live? And you know, do you have any pets? Because I was trying to find out about her, because basically I got a sheet saying her name, and we chose her because my daughter's middle name was her middle name. And my daughter's like, I want that one.
Nice.
Because we got like a sheet that said their name, their country of origin, and maybe like a few things they like to do and what age they were. And so she came and we asked these questions. And then she was very upset because she's like, didn't you read the package I sent? And I was like, I don't know. She's like, I had to fill like a 10-page package about my interests and why I came, with pictures of my family. She's like, I spent like weeks on this thing. And I didn't ever, like, I never got anything like that. Then if I reflected back, we had often, you know, after like a day or two of when students would come, we'd sit down and say, can you tell us about your country? Let's see some pictures on Google Maps. Let's see where you live. And it was always a very good thing. And sometimes people would bring photo albums and so on and so forth. But that had been our experience. So with this particular person, she had filled out a 10-page report we never saw. So she thought we were being totally rude by not knowing anything about her.
Oh.
And we didn't. So
yeah.
That was an interesting. So those lines of communication is like really important to say, tell us about your life and who you are. But she had this expectation that we should have known. So thank goodness she said something, because that was very interesting.
That could have gone sideways.
Yeah. So what happened with that package? Was it something that just got sent to like an agency or that didn't make it to you somehow?
Well, I feel like all of our students, they have like the different agencies tell them what to expect. I feel like the Japanese students maybe say, okay, yeah, you'll sit down and you'll tell them about things. Our Argentina student had made a photo album that she had to bring with her. So mm-hmm. then she had something. So if we hadn't asked to see it,
right.
I feel like she wasn't like bringing it over to see us. Have you had these things? No.
We sometimes get like similar, like a sheet, and it might have some information, but we don't ever have like the package with the pictures. We'll get told, oh, here's your student's contact information. Please make contact before they come and try and open up a line of communication with the family before they come. And at that point, we'll email back and forth and try and exchange details, or, you know, this is our what we look like. So, you know what we look like at the airport, and pictures of us with our kids and as much as that family or that student is willing to communicate with us beforehand, we'll do that. And sometimes there isn't much. And sometimes there's a lot of communication back and forth. And we'll, with our last student, we had, you know, pictures of her grandparents and her family vacationing and what to expect from our house. This is what we do. These are our routines.
Yeah, I find most of the students that I get, I don't get any information from them. It's usually just the name, their mm-hmm. age, and what country they're from. And then if I'm lucky, I have enough time to email them in advance, because sometimes it's just, oh, they're coming this week. I'm like, well, I'll email them, but I'll probably won't get a reply in time. And then I feel really bad because I write like the whole story about us. I send pictures. I'm like, this is what we like to do on weekends. You're welcome to join us. You know, we have a daughter. I give her the whole bio on an email, without knowing if they can actually read English or not.
They'll be using Translate too.
So most of the time I get emails back really late and apologizing because their English is so poor that they had to translate my novel that I have sent them.
You gave them homework.
Yes, I gave them a lot of homework. So yeah.
That's amazing. One of the students we had said she loves guitar. So I sourced out a guitar mm-hmm. and I got her a guitar. I don't know if it was it. Typo, because she never picked up that guitar. I don't know. She just like stared at it with horror. So I'm like, did she actually play the guitar? I never knew.
Or maybe it was somebody else filling in that exactly. part for her. Yeah. I've done that too before, where I've sourced out musical instrument to people.
One of our Argentinian students, he said that when the kids filled out the forms, okay, one of the kids put, I'm a high level tennis player, so I need to stay in a house that has a tennis court. And then our student said, He wasn't a high level tennis player. He just wanted to stay with a rich family.
Oh, yes. Oh. Trying to control the things that they're trying to control, right? If they put that in.
Oh, I haven't heard
of
that
one. As soon
as you
said that, I was like, oh, I think I know where that one's going. That's... If you have a tennis court, then you have a big property, or you have access, or you're in like a condominium with access to like a tennis court.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah. Like, that's kind of brilliant if they want to hack the system.
Totally trying to hack the system. There's like mama bears on the other side of the world, right? Advocating for their children.
Yeah. It's like, we're going to try and find you that tennis court since you're such a high level player.
Exactly. And the homestay, they found a person who lived next door to tennis court. So they actually worked really hard to find a placement for that boy.
Mama bears of the world unite, right?
Oh my gosh.
One of the other challenges I just thought about is scented products. Because in Canada, we really, there's a lot of offices that don't allow people mm-hmm. to wear scents. You can't go to a hospital or even work wearing strong smelling deodorant, shampoo, perfume.
A lot of places are a scent-free mm-hmm. environment.
But our Mexican students, it's like, according to them, it's probably the worst thing you can do is have body odor. So they would wear a lot of scent. And I feel like because it's a humid climate, maybe the products that they use would have scent that clings better. So I didn't realize I was so sensitive to scent until I had these Mexican students who I got asthma from.
Oh my gosh.
Their, I don't know, shampoo, deodorant that just had this scent that was ever emitting itself. And so even if their friends came over, I'd have to be like, oh my God, you guys stink. So then I learned that I had to actually, like, I think actually you might have given me this idea of like saying,
what did I say?
We provide the shampoo and saves space in your bag so you don't have to bring anything. But also I felt like I needed to say, put all your scented products aside. I can buy you all this non-scented products, because in Canada, it's really not okay to wear so much perfume. And I thought that was really hard to tell a teenage girl mm-hmm. that she stinks because she's wearing so much product when it's a huge insult to them to stink. It was like,
it's like catch 22. They mm-hmm. I had a Japanese student once who I felt like she didn't have a sense of smell, because she had scented everything, the shampoo, like what you were saying. Like, I could always tell when she had a shower because you can smell the product. And I could tell when she left the house because the smell follows her down the stairs. And I was getting headaches too, but I didn't know what to do or say around that because that's her personal space stuff.
Like personal hygiene, how she cares. And
yeah. And she wasn't staying very long. So I didn't want to make a big deal out of it. I'm like, that's okay. I'll just suck it up. And I think the next time I told the school that I was hosting with that I would prefer somebody with either no scent or light scented products, no perfume in the house. Mm-hmm. I think what I eventually went with. But even after she left, the scent stayed in that room for months. Like months. I had other students and other guests coming through that room and it always smelled like her.
And I'm sure you aired it out.
Oh, I aired. Sunned. Like I put things out in the sun hoping the UV would get rid of the smell.
That's pervasive.
It never, ever did. So I understand your challenge on that.
It is challenging too. Like when you go into stores and things are marketed and sold that way too, that towards teenagers and adults. And,
yeah.
And then when you also have, like, as you say, you didn't even realize respiratory issues that were caused by the products too. How to navigate that in a sensitive way that doesn't, what might be a cultural reason to have to wear that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that might not ever come through in the application form either. Mm-hmm. Because I also had another student where she arrived and she said, oh, I forgot all my shampoo. And I said, oh, I have shampoo here. It's okay. Like, you can just use this. She's like, no, I need to go to the store now. I'm like, well, you've arrived early enough. And if you're not jet lagged, sure, I'll take you around town. We'll take you to the shop and we'll buy some stuff. And of course, in comparison to Japanese grocery stores, like our aisles of options for shampoo is 100 times
smaller?
Larger.
Ours are larger?
Than in Japan.
Really?
Or at least the students that I've had.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They show up and they look at the aisles and like, I'm so overwhelmed at what to pick. Okay. I don't know what to pick. I narrowed it down to like a brand I might like or have used in the past or heard that it was all right. And I said, oh, we have products in our house are unscented. So, you know, we prefer to have maybe like this scent or this scent. And she's like, no, has to be fruit or roses. Like, okay.
All right.
Sure, I guess.
So which is the less offensive?
She was nice enough to say, okay, I like these two. You choose between this one or this one.
Oh, that's kind.
So we worked through it a little bit and tried to have wins for the both of us. If that makes sense or not.
That's a very mother-daughter relationship right there. Negotiations.
Negotiation, yes. Over scent.
Yeah.
Over scent. Yeah, you would never think that that would be an issue when you sign up.
Yeah, no, never thought about that, ever.
Mm-hmm. I'm allergic to your shampoo. Great. What do I do now?
You and all your friends that are coming over would be really difficult.
What about some successes then? What are some memorable moments or students that you can't get out of your head? They were so wonderful.
We've had a lot of wonderful students, I have to say. We have been lucky. Our Belgium student, yes. Marie, who is just here, I feel like the fall is a really wonderful time to have students because it's cold and it gets dark early. There's like a lot of things in our culture that are a bit different, like Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. Going to the pumpkin patch, Halloween, even Remembrance Day, like a few things that we do that students are like, wow.
It's more family oriented too. Like I find in the summertime, mm-hmm. there are so many things to do outside in the city that like
events.
Yeah, I never see them. Mm-hmm. You know, they've always got some sort of a school event or their friends want to go out and see some sort of an event that they're never around. But the ones, that show up in the fall, mm-hmm. that you really get to know them a lot more because of either it's the coziness mm-hmm. of being indoors and staying home, and then you're kind of forced to have a conversation.
Yes.
You're kind of just getting to know them too. If you're hosting with like the high school, it's the beginning, right? And you're just getting to know them and they're maybe haven't made all of those social connections quite yet. And it's the beginnings. And as you say, those beginning family times too, with the Thanksgiving and I totally feel you there with the fall and the coziness. And so then you're kind of creating those connections. And then from there, everything just kind of flourishes. And by the time Christmas comes around, everything's just kind of set.
Exactly. Yeah. And then kids get busier mm-hmm. in the spring. I don't know what it feels
like. And they're
just
more social and they have like their winter dances or whatnot.
Yes. But we always like to go to Goldstream to see the salmon spawning mm-hmm. too in the fall, or at any time of the year, we like to go out at least once, depending on how long the students are here, to have a like fire in the fire pit. So we had these two Japanese boys whose English was not very strong. And so we went out to Goldstream and then we hiked up to the Niagara Falls. One of them, they were kind of walking near the water and one of them slipped and fell into the water.
Oh, geez.
Which was cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my kids thought this was the funniest thing they ever saw. And he was quite good natured. So he just like laughed about it. And then we had a wiener roast and a marshmallow roast. But then his sock was so wet. So he started cooking his sock.
That's amazing. I hope nobody ate it.
This was like a while ago, but my kids still remember and talk about this. They're like, remember when he tried to cook his sock? Anyway, so that was pretty awesome in my kids' eyes still to this day. I understood that he was drying it off,
yes.
but
yes.
I'm pretty sure the kids actually thought he was
cooking his sock.
He's like, oh, a fire. This is where you dry your clothes.
Yeah. Good problem solving strategies.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
With our Argentinian student, he was hilarious also. I don't even remember what I made him, but I cooked something. He thought it was potatoes, but I think it might have been cauliflower. Mm. And he took a bite and then he was like, he had to run to the garbage can and spit it out. And we were laughing so hard. Because he's like, I thought that was a potato. You tried to kill me.
With a vegetable.
But in a very good-natured way.
Yeah.
And it was, the kids are like, oh my gosh, do you remember when you tried to kill Nico, Mom? I was like, it was a cauliflower.
Yeah. I was not trying to kill anybody.
With him, our kids didn't at that time like to eat meat. They like to eat carrots and vegetables. So we used to say to them, no more vegetables till you eat your meat. And he's from Argentina. So he'd be like, you guys are from another planet.
Yeah. It's only about the meat in Argentina.
What? Your kids will not eat meat? You have to tell your kids not to eat more vegetables?
They wouldn't survive. Yeah.
You just say, okay, stop fooling around or you're not going to get a book before bed, which he also was like, oh man, you guys are weird. Like, that's not a punishment in my household. That's like...
Yeah, every culture is different. Growing up, I didn't read books. My parents never read to me, so I could have cared less about that. But yeah, I use that as a threat now for Kira because she's all about the books.
Oh, so is my son. Yeah. Like, it's the worst thing if we take away his book before. But yeah, we have to actually go in and physically take them away so that he will go to sleep.
That is a total North American mm-hmm. thing culturally, like a book before bedtime. And you mm-hmm. see like the mommy and daddy reading a book to the little child before bed. Like, that is a fairy tale from other countries.
Yes, you don't realize that. What's the other thing? When we had one student, because she came in the fall and it was dark early in the evening, and I said, okay, let's take the dog for a walk. And we went out and she's like, oh, in my country, in my house, we have a gated community. I'm not allowed outside the house in the dark. And she had never gone for a walk in the dark. Mm. And she was so scared the first few times. And then by the end, she was like... just staying out really late with her friends totally fine. It was like, that was quite interesting because it was like, wow, like what a different experience mm-hmm. to go for a walk in the dark and mm-hmm. that be scary.
Okay, not only have you told us that you went to Sweden and was a student of homestay and now you are hosting, but also you got to live with one of your former students and traveled to Belgium.
Yes, it was awesome.
So tell us about that.
So our student from Belgium, after she left, she came back to visit us that summer with her family, which was really fun. And so we hosted her entire family. They're from the French-speaking part of Belgium. So there was like some language barrier there.
Do you remember any of your French from when you went to
No.
Oh, no.
But my kids are in French immersion. So I can read it.
Okay.
So your kids could speak a little bit?
Except for it's a slightly different dialect.
Right.
So they can understand and they talk very fast.
Okay.
So my kids actually could not understand.
They didn't slow down at all to...
Because they would just switch to English. But yeah, so her parents came and stayed with us and that was fantastic. And they invited us to come back to Belgium. So we thought about it. And so then this summer, we went to Belgium to stay with them. And it was really, really awesome. We got treated like royalty. They put us up in their house. We stayed for 3 days. They took us all around Belgium. They hosted like 2 dinners for us. We had barbecue. They cooked us Belgian food.
Describe Belgian food. Yeah, what's that like?
Well, okay, we had waffles. Then we had Belgian meatballs. Then we had a cheese and beer night they did for us. So it was all Belgian cheeses and Belgian beers. I think they had like 20 Belgian beers.
Oh, wow.
And then they just like, their son, who was 21-ish, he would give us a little talk about each beer. And then it would get shared between 6 adults. Then the next one, he'd give like a history of why this was... I'm obviously not a beer connoisseur.
But yeah, there was a huge beer culture in Belgium. Like, I think they start drinking when they're like 12 or something like that.
And to have that confidence to like stand up and give a presentation, like, this is my favorite one because it's cheap, or like, this is a blonde ale, or this is a blended beer, or this is made in a monastery. There's only 11 in the world that are this type. And
wow.
Yeah, so it's very cool. They rented a minivan. We felt kind of, my husband and I felt like little kids, right? Because we had this relationship with their daughter more than the parents. Mm-hmm. And so we sat in the back of the minivan and got driven around. And it was neat. The kids got to see their like big Belgian sister and totally jumped all over her. And it was very cool. Yeah. I was a bit nervous going because it's like, oh, is that like, are we taking advantage of the situation? But then they had stayed with us for a week in the summer. So I was like, okay, leave. Yeah, it was nice.
Yeah. I wonder about that too. Like, planning the trip to Japan is my goal for April of next year. I told one student only.
Okay.
Because it's also the, yeah, I don't want to take advantage. I don't want to outright and say, I'm coming to Japan. Do you have a place to stay for us? But I also would love to experience living in their home with them and see what that dynamic is like. Yeah, I don't know what's the right phrasing.
I know. In hindsight, I feel like we got to Belgium. So we flew into Paris and then we went to Belgium the next day. So we had jet lag. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it would have been a slightly better human if I didn't have jet lag at that point.
Yeah.
So I feel like I would have maybe, but we were trying to fit a lot of things into our trip. So we had to be at the beginning so we could, because we're continuing to England to see my other friend. But
so jet lag was been the most challenging part of your trip.
Yeah, because I was like, and bedtime.
And bedtimes with the kid?
Oh, no. We would, you know, be visiting and then be like, I am so tired. I need to go to sleep. But they lived in a really small town. Yeah, it was an experience that we would have never had. Mm-hmm. No, I don't know anyone else from Belgium.
To be able to jump at that, right? Because you hosted and they came.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite the opportunity.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because I mean, you know, Marie and I had a lot of time together and she's like a wonderful human. And it was just really nice to see how, her parents were and how it was very cool.
So out of all the experience of you being the student, you being the host parent, and then you being the
hosted?
Yeah. Hosted.
Yeah.
Which experience was your most favorite? Which one did you enjoy the most?
Yeah.
Well, getting to explore another country is very exciting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for that time in my life, that kind of opened my eyes to a lot of things. Like living in Sweden, I was basically in love with that country. Stockholm is so beautiful. It's just such an old city that we don't get that in Canada at all.
Yeah. In comparison, Canada is so young.
And they had a very established like transportation system, which opened my eyes to like how things could be. And people bike and use transport. Like very few people have cars. And So I feel like in terms of opening my eyes, it was wonderful. And then hosting students has been really fun. They add a lot to our lives because you just do so many more things when they're here. Like you actually go to the pumpkin patch, or you actually
yeah.
go to Goldstream, or you do something, make a cake for Valentine's Day, which I would not necessarily go out of my yes. way to do those things. Although I'd always want to do those things to have, you know, mark the passage of time. I'm just fluffing around your question because they're all like,
they're all good.
Good. Yes. And then going to see Marie, like it was, and her family, that was really fun. It was like an unexpected bonus of hosting because it was never our intention to go visit our
yeah.
students.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was kind of cool that we had created a relationship that was close enough that it felt okay. I felt like we had another, she was like a longer term student, and then we had a student from Mexico, and her parents came and stayed with us also. And we have been invited back to Mexico, but that hasn't worked out yet.
Do you see yourself being in the future a natural parent? Do your children have aspirations to do a cultural experience?
I hope they will. Yeah, I think it's really mind-blowing for kids to do that. My son's already said, you know, Mom, if you just give me $3,000, I could like go to Paris and make my way to a Liverpool FC game. Like, no.
It's a little more than that, hon.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, I don't know if $3,000 is going to get you where you want to go.
Okay. I don't know, I go via Paris as opposed yeah. to via London, but yeah. he wanted to retrace our steps from the So giving your kids that kind of confidence and see like, okay, it's normal to travel is maybe a gift for them. Maybe I'll regret it when they leave. Like, oh.
Mama Bear, let them go.
Yeah. Do you think your kids are going to?
One of mine, like, because she sees that we host teenagers, right? And we host high school teenagers. And so she thinks that it's just normal when you're a teenager that your parents send you away. And so she's already said, no, I'm never leaving you. I'm never, ever, like, when I'm an adult, I'm just always going to live with mom and dad. And aww. So don't send me away. She thinks that we're going to send her to the Philippines or to Thailand. Because we had a Thai student and that we were close to. And so she's picked that as the country that we would send her off to. And so she's like, don't send me to Thailand, is what she says. She's scared we're going to send her off to Thailand. Yeah. So I've told her, no, you can always stay with mom and dad. So she's my middle child. And as a middle child, to stereotype three children, she's my Klingon. So so she, no, I don't know if they would want to, but I'm not going to close the door on it. But earlier we were talking up a bit about when you were, it was kind of eye-opening for you when you were being hosted yourself on how host families were, you know, just leaving you to do your own thing. And then now since you've hosted students, what are some of your tips, like when you're bonding with students and how are you drawing them out and so that you're
not leaving the kids.
Leaving them on your own. Yeah. What kinds of things would we see in your family when you're hosting? Like how you talked about going to Goldstream and things like that and getting out. But what if you had somebody new coming in, or what are some of your tips on how your advice you'd have for somebody?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had someone on the program mm-hmm. earlier about creating like family rituals or about meal rituals or something like that.
Yeah.
The dietitian. It was quite interesting. But we have with the high school international program, they recommend that you have the students home for dinner all the time. So we make some efforts to have dinners together and breakfast together, which I think is a big deal. We play a lot of board games and cards at the beginning just to make sure that they feel comfortable being upstairs and with us. So even with the kids who speak almost no English, we made up a game, card game, that's basically everyone gets a card. And one person is the guesser, and they have to say, is it a 6? And then you have to say higher or lower. And it goes around. And like that is like the limit for some of our students mm-hmm. with their English. But it gets them used to talking with us. And then my kids can play. Not everybody likes card games or board games, but I feel like that was a really big deal with all of our students. I feel like also teenagers love sweets, like baking with them at least once, or like buying some special desserts at some point that are Canadian. Everyone loves that.
What are some Canadian desserts in your mind?
Going to Dairy Queen. People were like blown away by Dairy Queen and having a Frosty or an ice cream cake.
Right.
They're like, wow, ice cream cake. One of our students was like, I'm going to start a business when I go back home and making ice cream cakes. So I was like, okay, this is an interesting thing. And pumpkin pie, donuts. I'm not a donut fan at all, but I feel like maybe donuts
so
are different.
Sad.
They're
so,
so big in our house.
So
are they?
Yeah. You're missing out.
Oh, and there's always like a specialty donut for like the time of year.
Yeah. So do you guys have desserts? Do you?
I'm with you on the ice cream cake all the way with like the fudge layer. Like that's one of my daughter every year for her birthday. That's what she wants. Is a Dairy Queen ice cream cake.
Well, we make them sometimes.
You make the ice cream cake?
Yeah, because it's like pretty much the easiest dessert to make.
Okay.
You just let the ice cream soften a little bit.
Yeah.
And then put it in a pan.
What are those pans that have the...
Oh, the springform?
Get a springform pan.
Okay.
You put like a base.
Right.
Put What's your cream. Base? Like cookie, like Oreo cookie crumbs?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
With butter. Or you could put like melt chocolate to be really... really easy, or you could, and then you put ice cream, put it in the freezer for like a minute while you get the other ice cream out, take it out, put the next layer in.
Do you put anything in between for the layers?
You could. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, my eyes are just like wide open over here, guys. I'm just salivating over your ice cream cake that you can make. Okay. Hello.
And making it with international students, it's like you don't have to mix anything.
You
just...
You open tubs and you put it in. Love it.
This is like the rice intervention, but with ice cream.
What's the rice intervention?
The rice intervention. So basically, all of my life, I've been doing rice wrong. And at every
point. From my world, she's been cooking rice wrong.
At every point in our relationship, there have been opportunities for her to set me straight. And it takes having students from, anyway.
No, I told you to buy a rice cooker years ago.
The rice. There was the washing of the rice.
The washing of the rice.
Was like years ago. She taught me how to wash rice. And then apparently I've been putting salt and butter in when I shouldn't be. And it took Jenny, I think, 2 years to speak up, to feel safe enough in my warm, welcoming house, to feel safe enough to say
Chinese student.
No rice and no butter.
Yeah.
And so that was a rice intervention. And then there was an intervention that, yes, Aaron, you can put like, which I have yet to do. I can cook chicken in my
in your rice cooker.
In my rice cooker. I've yet to do that. We do put in those things that you chop that are orange.
Carrots?
Orange peppers?
Sweet potatoes.
Oh.
We cook those in there. Now, there's an intervention that I do that I corrupt my students with my sweet, lovely blue cheese dressing that we put on top of the rice. I eat rice with she's shaking her head.
So terrible.
It's so delicious. But I am happy to update our listeners that my new Japanese student has won the family over with noritama or furikake. Am I saying that right?
A furikake, yes.
With the... That you put on top
of
the seasoning?
Like a Japanese rice topping with the seaweed and sesame seeds. And
sometimes like there's bonito, there's egg. Or
Different flavor.
We'll put that on the rice. But I also mix it with blue cheese dressing.
You mix that with blue cheese?
It's so good. And so does Violet. Yes.
Oh, that sounds really disgusting.
Anyway, like, let the intervention continue.
Blue cheese and furikake? Together?
Yes. It's so good.
No. Maybe.
Anyway, so those are my disgusting rice interventions, but that's what we eat at our house. What kinds of beautiful things do you cook for your students?
Not that, right, Heather?
No. My kids do not like rice, so.
Well, they would die at my house. They would actually, I don't know, like they would eat their, they would get carrots and peppers, and they would be happy with their vegetables. And yes, we would force them to eat their meat. But wow, no rice?
Yeah.
I throw temper tantrum when we cook potatoes.
So then what do you cook in your household for your students? What are your favorite dishes to make for a student?
They would like turkey occasionally, even if it wasn't over like a holiday, because they don't eat turkey in their countries often. you have to cook hamburgers at least a few times.
At least a few times. Yeah.
That's Blake's specialty.
And we usually do pizza at least, again, once. So they, you know, get the dough and then they can put their own toppings on, because for some students, that's very unique and interesting. You know, I have little kids, so they don't like food that's touching.
So it's like, I'm a grown kid and I also don't like my food to touch.
Your food on the plate has a bubble too?
Well, because culturally, growing up in a Chinese household, you have your small bowl of rice.
Okay, I get this.
And then what you take is from the middle of the table. So you take like one piece of meat and you eat it with your rice. And then you take your one piece of vegetable and you eat it in your rice. Like, you don't actually, John does this a lot, where we'll have our little bowls of rice, but he'll pile food on top of his rice bowl.
That's how I would do it. Yeah.
No, that's not. You're not supposed to do it that way. Oh. So if you ever go to visit your Chinese student in China at their family's home, don't go spooning all the food on top of your rice bowl. You're supposed to take one piece at a time and eat that and then move on to the next piece, because you are sharing the communal food. If you scoop a lot, it looks like you're greedy and you want to take all the best pieces first. So it's about sharing and none of my food ever touching. So still to this day, so like, for example, when I need to pack my lunch for work, I would have like the one microwavable container, but I have the rice, like if it's a square container, I have the rice sitting diagonally from corner to corner, and that is the buffer divider between the vegetables and the meat.
Can I just say that your explanation of your food and the dinner and everything just made your whole bubble make cultural sense for me?
Oh.
Like your whole, you know how you have the bubble and the hugging and the touching?
Yeah, like I don't hug.
It's a cultural, it makes so much more culturally how your bubble came to be.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
It began from the food.
It came from, yeah. Yeah, it does.
Still learning new things about me every day.
Yes.
With my students, wherever they come from, I often try to make dinner that matches their culture in my mind. So for Japanese students, I will cook them rice or noodles and be like, hey, this is my version. What do you guys think? Again, as like a talking point for their like, this is not how my mom makes it. Yeah. That's pretty much the regular comment. Or with our Mexican students, we'd make like burritos or something. This is our version of what Mexican food is. What do you think? They're like, no. And yeah, with our Belgian, we made waffles quite a bit. She would laugh. So it's like our way to try to pretend something. Our student from Brazil, she had a Chinese ethnicity from Brazil. So she had like the merging of the cultures. So her and I made dumplings for Chinese New Year.
Oh, yeah.
And so she had never made them before, but her mom made them. So we made hundreds, probably like 50 of these dumplings. She was really excited about that because she's like, oh, I never actually get to make these.
Yeah. Whenever we make spaghetti for our students, Blake's like, our Italian student, Blake's always like, I'm just really sorry. Like, just don't judge. And don't judge how we eat it. And you know, like the twirling, like we cut our spaghetti. So we're always like really embarrassed.
I know, you just gotta own that.
We're just owning it. Yeah.
Yep.
We made lasagna for the first time the other night for the Italian student. We're just like, I hope it's okay.
Yeah. It's a North American style.
North American version. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yeah, that's interesting.
And did she have the same reaction as Heather's students where she's like, oh, that's not the way my mom would make it?
She would never say that. Yeah. Oh. Like, I don't think she would. I don't think so. Yeah, no. She wouldn't come out and say it. She might think it, but I don't think she. Ooh, she's awesome. More shy.
Well, I kind of want our students to say it because then I know that they're like,
I'm working
they're
on
home.
It. I'm working on it.
Yeah.
I'm working
just going to make a worse lasagna so that she has to.
I can't do that to her. I could never do that to her. I've already told them that my lasagna has a 70% approval rating, but I got 100%. They all ate it.
Ooh.
I know. They all ate the lasagna.
Wow.
There's a lot of garlic toast being eaten that night too.
They need the vehicle
to get it. Mm-hmm.
Heather, thank you so much for dropping by on the podcast and sharing all your stories about homestay
thank
students.
You guys for having me. It was really fun.
It was fun. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Homestay Kitchen, hosted by Mary Chan and Aaron Eastman. Produced by me, Mary Chan of Organized Sound Productions. Web and show notes by Aaron Eastman. Like what you're hearing? Write us a review wherever you listen. Or drop us an email at homestaykitchen@gmail.com. We would really appreciate it. For more information on this episode, visit homestaykitchen.com. And when you're ready to dish up your stories, connect with us on Instagram @homestaykitchen or on Facebook. Thanks for joining us.